Impact, a continuing series of talks based on modern and ancient wisdom. And here is our host, Dr. Anil Mehta, at the Bakersfield Chinmaya Mission.
Today I'm trying to tackle a somewhat difficult subject called Just Be. I think especially for those of you who are new and have not been coming, this subject may be a little bit obtuse, but I'll try my best to make it simple and interesting. So I think it's very important for a spiritual student and for a meditator to just be. And when somebody says, don't do anything, just be, you say, what do you mean? Be what? Should I be happy? Should I be unhappy? Should I be successful, unsuccessful? And the opposite of that, when somebody tells me just be, that is I am. So when I say I am, that seems very incomplete. I have to have something afterwards, you know? I mean, I am an American, I am an Indian, I am black, I am white, I am rich, I am poor, I am a boss, I am an employee, I'm a man, I'm a woman. I am, you know, it's incomplete. Continue. What do you mean by I am? Or what do you mean by just be? So that is what we shall try to understand today. What do we mean by that? But before we proceed, we have to understand what is a thought. Because in meditation, or even in our spiritual pursuit, or in any pursuit, you have to be able to control your thoughts, master your thoughts, master your mind. So what is the mind? The best example they give is that they say the mind is a flow of thoughts. Just as when I ask you what is a river, you say, well, a river is a flow of water. If there is no water, if it's empty, then you will say that's not a river. It's just a river bed. Or if there is a water that is stationary, that is not moving, you say that's not a river, that's either a pond or a lake or, you know, or something, or a swimming pool, but it's not a river. So only flowing water can be called a river. So similarly, a mind is flow of thoughts. If there is no flow of thoughts, if the thoughts are stilled, then you enter a state of mindlessness. That is, there is no mind. The mind at that point disappears. Now, how to do that? We shall talk about that a little later. But to see what constitutes a thought, thought is made up of three ingredients. Just as if I say, what is a cake made up of? And the ladies here will tell me, well, a cake is made up of dough and sugar and water. Those are the ingredients, and then whatever icing I put on top. So that is the ingredients of a cake. That's how you make a cake. And so how do you make a thought? To create a thought, first you have to have consciousness. A person has to be alive. A dead person has no thoughts. So life or consciousness is the first requirement. Just as if I want to create a pot, I have to have mud. If there is no mud, there is no pot. So the mud is the constituent of all the pots in the world. So all the thoughts in the world emerge from consciousness or from life. The second ingredient of thought is time, and the third one is desire. Because every thought arises at a particular time and dies at a particular time. No thought is permanent. Even though it may seem so, that some, you know, people have so much stress and they feel that constantly. But at some moment or the other, that thought will end, whether you're in deep sleep or whether you take drugs or whatever. So thoughts arise in time and end in time. When you go to that state of timelessness, there will be no thoughts. and we shall talk about that a little later. So thoughts have consciousness, time, and desire. If you become totally desireless, when you have absolutely no desire, then at that time also your mind is totally stilled. The mind is only active when there is desire. And every thought has to have time, consciousness, and desire. If those three things are not there, there will be no thoughts. In fact, for a person who becomes desireless, he goes beyond time. And consciousness will still be there, life will still be there, but that person will go beyond time and will go beyond the mind. So that brings us to the next question: what is desire and how do I handle it? And we know that, especially in the modern society, living in this country where everything is available and there's TV and internet, and you see all these things, you know, you can buy this and you can buy that and this is available, and then they show you stories of these people who have these big homes in Bel Air and this palace and then this hotel in Abu Dhabi or Kuwait. And so it constantly feeds our desires, and our mind is constantly filled with one desire after another. And we live in a desire-prone society where the goal of life is, I have to fulfill all my desires. And we're not saying that it is wrong to have desires. You'll say, well, if I don't have desires, I won't do anything. That is true, but our problem arises that through desire, I postpone my happiness into the future. When I get that particular job, I will be happy, or when I marry that particular person, I'll be happy, or when I divorce that particular person, I'll be happy, or you know, when I get that particular object, and I want that car, or I want that house, or, you know. So, desires, first of all, always postpone your happiness. Secondly, there is no end to desires. The more you desire, it's like a fire. Just as the more you feed the fire, the more wood you put in, the more it grows. So the more you feed your desires, the more the fire of desire burns. And the third point is that desires, even though they give us joy, but the other side of joy is sorrow. It's like saying, I want a coin with only heads. I don't want any tails. I only want heads. No, you can't. If you get a coin, it will have heads on one side and tails on the other. And so all desires come with a mixture of joy and sorrow. Joy and sorrow goes together, because once I get something, then I'm sorrowful because I don't have any more, I want more. Or I'm jealous of somebody who has more than me. Or I have something and then I'm afraid I may lose it, and then I put all these security cameras and guards and fence and all that so that people may not take it from me. Or if I'm in a powerful position, I'm always afraid, you know, who's going to, you know, who's challenging me. If I'm the president, then, you know, somebody in the next election, I may lose. You know, and so joy and sorrow always go together. Not one is not there without the other. And so how do we handle desires? Does that mean one should not desire anything and just sit and do nothing all day? No, we don't say that. What we say is that you should control the desire instead of the desire controlling you. And the ability to drop the desire is very important. Like to give an example. Say a young boy comes to the teacher, I want to learn the saxophone. And he's carrying this dog in his hand whom he loves very much. And he says, I want to learn the saxophone, I want to learn the saxophone. So the teacher says, put the dog down. You cannot keep on holding the dog and then expecting to learn the saxophone. So you put the dog down, learn how to play the saxophone. Once having mastered it, then you can pick up the dog when you want, and then put the dog down and then play the saxophone. So similarly, desires, I should be able to drop them when I do not need them. So in my moments of silence, when I have experienced that bliss and that silence in meditation, in spirituality, and a wise person is able to drop the desires, he does not have unwanted desires coming to him or her. And so when that person drops the desire, then he or she is in that silence and that deep meditation. And then when the person wants to work in the world, he picks up the desire, but then he picks up the desire that he wants. He chooses what things he wants to desire. And having chosen, he picks up a particular desire. Say, I want to serve the world. I want to realize God. I want to do something good for mankind. So he or she can choose the desires. So pick them up, use them as needed, and then drop them and go back into that stillness. Go back into that peace. Go back into that silence. But what we do is that we make desires our goal, that achieving that. And not only even humans, even with God, when we go, we bargain with him. You know, God, I'll put a candle, I'll light a candle at your church and please give me $1,000,000. Or, you know, Hindu will say, I'll bring some flowers and give me this job. And we negotiate with him, we bargain with him. Because why? God also becomes a means of fulfilling our desires. This reminds me of a story. This man was walking in the forest and God appeared before him. So God says, what do you want? I'm pleased with you. So he says, God, I've heard that for you, 1,000,000 years is like 1 second. Is that true? He said, yeah. God's 1 second is equal to 1,000,000 years. He said, okay. And then I have heard that for you, $1,000,000 is nothing. It's like a cent. $1,000,000 for you is just like a cent. He said, yeah, $1,000,000 for me is nothing. He says, God, can I just please have only 1 cent? So God says, yeah, but just wait a second. So these desires we not only have in this lifetime, but we carry them. If you believe in rebirth, which, you know, as Hindus, we believe that the reason we are born is because we have these unfulfilled desires. And it was because of these unfulfilled desires that I have taken this birth. And each birth will go on and on until your desires are satisfied, until your desires are fulfilled. And each birth we suffer and we have all these problems. And I was hearing another very good example. He says, like, if there is a donkey. Now, if you beat him really hard with a stick and let him free, he'll run away. Will he come back again to you to be beaten again? No, he knows that this guy beat me. I'm not going to go near him. But we get so many beatings in this lifetime, but we keep coming again and again and again and again for more beatings. Next lifetime, again, I want to be beaten. So who is wiser? So the point is that each birth, we continue to suffer this pangs of desires and wanting and constantly suffering, and again the birth, and again going through the mother's womb, and again. So they say that become quiet, quieten your mind, learn how to handle your desires. That is the way to peace. That is the way to happiness. We think that happiness comes in fulfilling desires. We say happiness comes in reducing your desire so that you have less desires to fulfill. Then the question is, what is death? When we're talking about time, we say thought is death and time is death. Remember, we said thought has time, and we know time is death. Because I'm born at a particular time, and after a certain amount of time, I will die. But we say that thought is death. Now, that is a little difficult concept to explain, because think about it. Every thought arises in time, right? We said thought arises at a particular time and dies at a particular time. And one who goes beyond thought and goes beyond time becomes deathless. And if you think about it, you know, the body may die, but the fact of the matter is what our teachers have told us, that all of you are that infinite, timeless reality. All of us are that, a part of that Son, the part of the Lord, and He is in every one of us as the Om, as the life principle, as the consciousness, and that is your true nature. And once you experience oneness with that true nature, which is God or which is the life principle within, you understand that I am that timeless reality. This body is just a pair of clothes that I have worn at this time. This mind and intellect is a little paint, the color. And at the time of death, I will drop this body, this mind, this intellect, these desires, and I will become one with that timeless. In fact, even right now, we are that timeless entity, but we have not understood that, and we have identified ourselves with the clothes. Just as a person starts thinking, I am this blue shirt, or I am this green pants, or I am this black dress, then we will say this person is a fool. You'll say, you are not these clothes, you are just wearing these clothes. So similarly, the masters tell us, you are that timeless reality, you are that consciousness, you are that permanent self, who at this moment is putting on these clothes of this body, and you're calling yourself Anil or Kerry or Lisa or whatever the names you have taken are of dress you have put on, but you are that timeless reality, you are deathless, you are permanent. And once you experience that, then you go beyond death. And think about it, Jesus Christ, He became one with that Lord. Now even 10,000 years from now or 20,000 years from now, as long as there are people on this earth, they will remember Him. If you look, think about Buddha or Guru Nanak or Swami Chinmayananda or any of these great masters, they went beyond death because they realized their infinite nature. That, like Christ said, the Father in heaven and I are one. He who has seen me has seen the Father. So He understood that I am that timeless reality, and even when He was dropping His body, He had no fear, He had no sorrow, He had not even the trace of, you know, discomfort. In fact, all He did was felt sorry and compassionate for the people who were doing that to Him. So these great souls, once they go into that timeless reality, they go beyond death. So death is nothing but thoughts. Death is nothing but time. How do I go beyond desires? How do I go beyond time? How do I go beyond death? He said, bring your mind to silence. Because it is very well known that the more desires you have, the more agitation you have, the more problems you have. But when your mind has less thoughts, has less desires, has less agitation, their mind is at peace. And that is what we try to do in meditation. Not only in meditation, think about it. You know, there is one lady who is very worried because her child is sick and in the hospital, and she can't go see him because he's in the ICU. And all night, you know, she's having so many thoughts of worry and fear. And can that lady sleep? No. Every minute of the night is so difficult for her, and she's just waiting for the morning when she can go back to the ICU and see her child. And she can't sleep a minute. And then there are four other men in the next room who are playing poker, you know, and all they're doing is all night cards, diamonds, spades, clubs, you know, straight flush, royal flush. And their mind is very focused, only few things, cards, diamonds, spades, clubs, nothing else. And for them, 8 hours, they start at 8 in the morning and it's 8 at night and it's 8 o'clock in the morning. Oh my gosh, 12 hours have passed, we didn't even know. Why? Because they went beyond time. Why? Because they had very few thoughts. When their thoughts were minimum, the less the number of thoughts, then the more, the quieter the mind, such a person goes beyond time. And for them, sometimes, you know, people play poker for 24 hours. They'd hardly even get up to go to the bathroom. Why? Because their mind is focused on one thing. While the other person, whose mind is agitated, full of thoughts, she can't sleep. So they say, bring the mind to silence. And how do we do that? You know, as we practice in meditation, you know, watch your breath, concentrate on the sound of the mantra, chant the name of the Lord. And as you become more and more quieter, as your mind becomes quieter, as it becomes less agitated, you experience peace, you experience bliss, and you go beyond time. And that is why these great yogis, these meditators, there are stories of them being in meditation for years. Not stories, but there are true examples. You know, there was a saint in the 1940s, Raman Maharishi in India, who, it has been documented, stayed for several years in a cave and didn't come out. And for years, he was staying in one position and his whole body was covered with mud. And after years, when somebody discovered him, they actually had to break the rocks to pull him out because he had got caked in the mud. And who preserved his body? How did he go? Because he became one with that self. And such a person goes beyond time, goes beyond death. And then the body gets preserved because the metabolism slows down. The heart rate drops to like 4 or 5 per minute. The respirations drop to 1 per minute or 0 per minute. And then the whole body becomes cooler. And such a person can stay for years in meditation. Then they say, just be. Because our problems arise from, I want to be something. You know, I am something, but now I want to be something. I want to be this, I want to be that, I want to achieve this, I want to achieve that. Not only that, but even enlightenment or even realization, we postpone into the future. In the future, I will be enlightened. In the future, I will realize God. In the future, I will meet Him. And then I'll be happy when I see God. So they say that, in fact, you are complete. You are perfect. Each and every one of you is a perfect creation of the Lord. There is nobody who is imperfect. There is nobody who is defective. There is nobody who is not a perfect creation. But why do we have sorrows? Why do we feel incomplete? Why do we suffer? Because of these vasanas, because of these desires. And how do I reduce my desires? So they say the only thing in spiritual practice you have to do is reduce your desires and just be. Do not say that I will become, but I am. I will be happy. No, I am happy. I am fine. And how do we do that? How do we reduce your desires? By doing unselfish service, by serving the world without expecting anything in return, by loving the Lord and constantly remembering Him and trying to become one with Him, and by knowledge, by meeting teachers and learning from them. And that's all you need to do. Just reduce your desires, reduce your selfish desires, your vasanas, and the Lord's presence within you will shine. The Lord is already within us as the life, but we have covered Him with a layer of dirt, of selfishness, of negativity, of anger, of greed, of jealousy, of hatred. And as you purify your mind, clean your mind of these negativities of anger and hatred and selfishness and greed and jealousy. And that's what we find in these saints. You know, they are full of love and sympathy and compassion. And they do not need to do anything. Love spontaneously flows out of them. For us, we have to make an effort. You know, this person I don't like. But the Bible says, you know, love everybody. So from tomorrow, I'm going to try and love this person. So we have, for us, it is an effort. But for a saint, it comes spontaneously because he or she has no selfishness, has no preconditionings, and unconditionally loves the whole world because he sees that my beloved Lord, who has created me, has created this whole universe. And everything is Him and Him alone. And for a saint, it is very easy to see the Lord in everybody. For you and me, it is difficult because we condition ourselves. You know, this is my friend, this is my enemy. He belongs to my race, he belongs to my color. In India, we say he belongs to my state. You know, we have all these, you know, preconditionings. And that's why we love some others and we hate some others. So they said, just be. Do not try to be something else. Just be what you are and be contented, and you will reach that. Because to do anything, you have to be first. You say, okay, I am walking, but I am. First I have to be, and then only I can walk, or I am talking, or I am listening, or I am cooking, or I... to sitting or standing or sleeping, but I am comes before anything else. So they say, just stay as I am. Do not put that additional verb, because you are essentially complete and stay in that. And that is what we practice in meditation, that make your mind quiet, turn it inwards into that silence, and then experience. And as your mind becomes more quiet in meditation, you experience that oneness with the Lord. And then you do not need anything else. And a person sitting in meditation is happy, no matter where they are, whether it's hot or cold, whether their seat is hard or soft. It doesn't matter whether it's early in the morning or late at night. Why? Because he has experienced the self within. And they say that be a witness, because the closest thing to being in silence is to be a witness. To go directly into that silence, into that being, is very difficult. You know, where I say, okay, I'm going to sit down and do nothing. I am just going to be, and that is very difficult. You say, okay, I'll be a witness. So in meditation, we practice being a witness. And then you say, okay, I'm going to watch my body as it relaxes. I'm going to watch my breath as it's moving in and out. I'm going to watch my mind, watch the thoughts that arise. And so slowly, slowly, I'm witnessing my body, I'm witnessing my breath, I'm witnessing my mind, and I'm witnessing my desires. So everything I'm witnessing, my body, my mind, my desires, and then the more I become a witness, the closer I come to the self. So they say, be a silent witness, not judging, not deciding, not even saying, you know, my meditation is very good today. Oh, my mind is so peaceful. Automatically you have gone away from that witness. I have a habit of doing that, unfortunately. Or today my mind is very agitated. Just do not do that. Just be a witness. Yes, my mind is agitated. That's okay. My mind is peaceful. That is still okay. My mind is happy. My mind is unhappy. That is still okay. So be a witness of the mind, of whatever good or bad or joyful or sorrowful or angry or peaceful. Whatever thoughts are arising in the mind, then they are not me. The mind is an instrument that I use, but I am not the mind. I am a witness of the mind. So watch the mind, be a witness of the mind, and stay in that silence. And that is what we practice in meditation. And slowly, slowly, even that witness drops, and you become one with that, where there is nothing else but that self. That is what these great saints that stake the reach. Just as when you're trying to sleep, you say, I'm trying to sleep. You won't sleep. But you just quieten your mind and then try to just think of nothing, and then just, or like what we say, just, you know, watch your breath and then relax your body and chant the mantra, and slowly, slowly you will find the mind becomes quiet, and then you merge into sleep. You disappear into sleep. You do not make an effort to force yourself. The more you make an effort, the more difficult it is to sleep. So similarly, the more you try to experience, I must experience enlightenment, I must find out who is this God, the further away you get. So just quieten your mind, be a silent witness, and do not at that moment try to do anything, achieve anything. Because even trying to achieve enlightenment is also trying to achieve something. So be silent, and in that silence, you will drift into, or you will merge into, that is what we call samadhi, is the merger. You will merge into that self, into that Lord's presence, that we all really are. We all are divine, but we are lost. We have gone away from our true nature. So you are that. You just have to go within. Instead of looking for God outside, look for him within. And the more you go in, the easier it is to find him. And the last one is, desirelessness is a boon to humanity. And that's what we find, that these great saints, they did not even have the desire to help. You know, ultimately, even that desire has to be dropped. You know, a person may say, oh, I'm going to help mankind. But Jesus, he did not say, I'm going to help mankind and start a new faith called Christianity, which will benefit the whole world. No, he just experienced this truth. He understood it and he went out and he just preached to whoever listened. If they heard him, fine. If they didn't hear him, they killed him. He was still fine. But his message today, millions of Christians throughout the world, billions are benefiting from it. Buddha did not preach. You know, he had 100 or 200 people. He just traveled in a few villages, maybe a few thousand. And he did not say, I'm going to start something called Buddhism, you know, that people will remember me after I'm gone. No, spontaneously. He was teaching and they become a great boon to humanity. And so that is what they're saying, that these prophets, because they have become desireless, because they have become totally peaceful, because they have become one with him, they spontaneously serve and they develop so much power because they give up their I and the Lord is working through them. So when the Lord is working, he is limitless, infinite, all perfect. And that is what happens with this. So they say, become desireless, become one with him, and become an instrument. So whatever you are doing, I am not doing it. The Lord is working through me. With that attitude, when you work in the world, then you become a true servant of the Lord. That's how you can help the world. And then the ego does not come in, that I am doing it, or I am so great, or I am so wonderful, I am so perfect, that I has to disappear for him to function through me. So I have to disappear, then only he works through me. The last line is actually the head of our mission, Swami Tejomayananda. When I was talking to him, he was visiting here a couple of weeks ago. And so I was just walking with him in the building, and he said, you know, just be. He says, I can give you three lines that how to live in the world. So he said, in your meditation, in yourself, just be. But in your dealings with the world, be just. When you're dealing with others, be fair. Be just with them. Treat them as you want to be treated. And third, in your relationships with your near ones, adjust. So just be. In yourself, be just with others in your dealings, and with your spouse, your children, adjust. And once you do that, then your actions in the world are perfect. So this is, it's a little difficult subject. I tried my best to explain it. It's even hard for me to understand, but I hope I was able to give you a little glimpse of that.
This concludes this segment of Impact with Dr. Anil Mehta. Join us again next time.